Thank you, Trey. We agree.
Get you sexy, huh?
Back here on Darren, Donnick, and Chase. Darren McFarland and Chase McCabe here today. We are ready. Willie will join us tomorrow. He's off today. Tim Hasselbeck. We talk to him every Wednesday on the program. He's ready. He's our NFL expert and analyst. He does the same thing for ESPN. He now joins us. Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you guys doing?
Well, we're doing fantastic, and let me just start off right out of the gates by congratulating you on yet again telling us the truth, telling us like it is. You've broken, you know, you've been consistent with messages in the past that have all played out, and you've been very consistent about Aaron Rodgers this entire offseason, saying he's going to be the Packers quarterback. He is going to be under center. He is going to be their quarterback this season, and guess what? It seems like there's a little kumbaya going on in Lambeau Field, and everybody.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but
well, you know, for a season, they've. You know, I'd say all bets are off the way they've reconstructed this contract. But I do think that they're roasting marshmallows right now, making some s'mores for this upcoming season. Everybody is together. But I just wanted to say, you told us it was good. Look, he is going to be the Packers quarterback this year. Enough said, and it's played out that way.
Appreciate that. Appreciate you remembering that. That has been my stance on it. I think we've probably talked enough that Aaron. We all know that Aaron wanted out. Aaron wanted to go to San Francisco, and there was a chance that that was going to happen prior to the draft. And when San Francisco, you know, traded their picks to move up to eventually, you know, draft Trey Lance, that opportunity came and went, which meant there was nowhere else for Aaron to go. And people can talk about the Broncos or the Raiders or teams like that, but the reality is nobody could really figure out what the compensation should be for a guy that's, you know, I forget the numbers. It's like 99 touchdowns and 9 interceptions over the past 3 seasons and is under contract and would be relatively underpaid, you know, by the position standards. Like, no one could figure out what the compensation for that player would be. 1, 2, Aaron would have to want to go to that spot, and they would have to be a better team than Green Bay. And so there was no landing spot for him. So, as unhappy as he's been in Green Bay and as frustrated as he is with certain people in the organization, his best chance to win a Super Bowl is in Green Bay. And Green Bay, with him on their roster, is a Super Bowl contending team this year. If he is not on their roster this year, there's a really good shot they don't even make the playoffs. So, look, there was never really another legitimate option outside of San Francisco. And when they drafted a quarterback, I think that slammed the door on the idea that he was going to be somewhere else. And he was never going to sit out. I mean, I know that was a threat, but he was never going to sit out. Like, it's not just about the money. The money is a factor no matter how much he's made. Money's still part of, you know, part of the equation. But trying to win another Super Bowl is also another big part of the equation. And sitting out doesn't allow you to do that.
I want to give some also kudos to the Texans, hashtag sarcasm, for them saying, you know what, okay, fine, we'll agree to trade Deshaun Watson.
So noble.
So, I mean, you guys, man, you guys got your stuff together down there in Houston. Where do you think this is going with Deshaun Watson? You've seen the report like we have that maybe they have interest in trading with the Dolphins. Maybe there's a piece in their secondary that would really interest them. But, you know, how realistic is it that they're going to be able to trade Deshaun Watson, considering all that we know is going on behind the scenes with the league, the uncertainty of really what his future is in suspension or what have you? What kind of odds do you give it right now, and where do you think it's all going ultimately?
I feel like in these situations I want to put myself in the shoes of, you know, being a general manager at a team that would need a quarterback. Okay, so say you're a team. Say it's the Dolphins, but I don't think they're a great example because of, I think we've kind of written two off too quickly. But like, let's just take any team that needs a quarterback, and you're the general manager. Well, it's not debatable that Deshaun Watson on the field is fantastic. I mean, just look at last year, he threw for nearly 5,000 yards. He threw 33 touchdowns and 7 picks. Like, and look, the team wasn't great, and there was, you know, whatever. The guy's been outstanding when he's played. But, like, that's not the issue. The issue is he going to be suspended? Like, is he going to be criminally charged in, you know, with any of these accusations? Like, what is the reaction going to be from our fan base, you know, if we sign him, if some more details about some of these allegations, become public, and, you know, maybe there's a different public outcry, than there currently is, because it seems very quiet around, you know, everything he's been involved with or, you know, allegedly involved with. So, what do you do? Like, he's a good player, so the compensation, who's under contract, so the compensation would be high, but yet he might be suspended. So, like, you can't, you know, give up too much because he may not be able to play. So, I don't know. I think this is just one of these scenarios where it's like Houston's just going to be better off playing him until they're told he can't play anymore.
Mm.
Like, I think that's what happens in Houston.
So you think he...
Week one,
he's under center?
I think if that the pace of these investigations, I don't know why we think in, you know, just over a month, right? So the regular season is going to start in 5-6 weeks now. So just over a month that all of a sudden we're going to have some drastically different information. I mean, basically, the statements I've seen are, you know, like, yeah, we're monitoring it. Like, we don't, but we haven't really talked to that many people and don't have that much information, right? I mean, isn't that the sense you've gotten in terms of the league's reaction
to it? Mm-hmm.
Very
fair.
I don't think the league, and I don't think the league's going to do that to the Texans, where they show up on their, you know, they let them know September 1st, like, hey, that guy you've been getting all the first team reps to, like, he can't play this year. I don't think they're going to do that unless there's more information that is made public. So with that being the case, like, how do you, if you're David Culley, how do you sell to your team, yeah, Tyrod Taylor's our quarterback and our backup or our third guy is Deshaun Watson? Like, I don't think you can cut him. Because, one, the cap ramifications, I mean, just signed a new deal. And two, like, let's just say that the league is like, look, we talked to people. No one wants to cooperate. Like, you know, people have made these allegations, but we really don't have that much information. Like, he's good to go. Like, he can play. Well, if that happens, then you're going to play him if you're Houston. I would.
Yeah, it sounds – I mean, I get it. I see what you're saying. Like, what's really going to change from now to the start of the season? I can't imagine that the league is going to – I mean, they haven't said anything this entire offseason, right? Why would they say something in 2 weeks from now? Right? I mean, do you think the league is really going to come out and render some decision in the next couple of weeks? Highly unlikely.
And that's why when you look back at the Antonio Brown situation, and it was like, oh, wait a second, he's a free agent. Anyone can sign him. And everyone's like, well, I don't know. I've seen. Whatever, former trainer, girlfriend, you know, masseuse, whatever it was. And so we're going to wait and see. Well, then the league came out, I think, prior to training camp. And last year was kind of a weird year. It was like, hey, you know, he can't play until after week 8. He's like, okay, well, you know, that at least gave the teams, like, they knew at that point,
right,
like, what they were getting into bed with, right? Like, they were like, okay, like, this is the situation. All right, okay, I can deal with, you know, weeks 9 through 16 in the postseason.
Yeah. Okay, so tell me if you're taking the over or the under on Carson Wentz, let's say in the Titans division. Now let's shift to Indy. So out is Philip Rivers, retired. In is Carson Wentz. Last year, Phillip Rivers threw for 4,169 yards. So let's go 4,100 yards as the yard marker, 24 touchdowns, and 11 interceptions. Are you taking the over or the under on Carson Wentz stats going off that gauge of what Phillip Rivers did last year with the Colts? Would you take the over or the under?
Oh, well, I'm going under on the yards.
You're going under on the yards? Okay. What
going
about
under
touchdowns?
Under on the yards. The touchdowns at 24. Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be I think it's going to be right around that number. So, I mean, I can say that I can – like, if you were to not give me those numbers and said how many touchdowns is he going to throw, I probably would have said 25. So that would put me at the over. But, like, I don't think he throws 30, but I think he throws more than 20.
Okay. 11 picks.
And then the 11 picks.
Probably the over?
He throws – oh, man. Again, like, if you would have not told me the numbers – I probably would have told you 25 and 12 or 25 and 13. So that would put me on the over. Saying that, though, I do think that they're gonna manage that. That team's gonna run the football. If they put that thing on his shoulders, then I think they're doing it wrong in Indy, and I don't think they're going to.
Okay, so that there's a reason why I'm asking this, because I'm a little perplexed on why everybody is so high on Indy. They went 11-5 last year and got into the playoffs and played Buffalo really, really close and tight, and they lost in the playoffs. But I agree with what your assessment. I agree with your assessment. I would take the under in yards. I think those at 24-11 is right around it, give or take. Maybe you slightly take the over, what have you. So why is everybody so high on Indy if you think Carson Wentz is going to be basically the same, or maybe you could make a case even less than what Phillip Rivers did last year?
Well, because would you say they're 11-5 in the regular season? They went toe to toe with the Bills, who, you know, I think a lot of people believe are on the cusp, and they've got basically everybody back from last year, and their quarterback is excuse me, more athletic than the guy that put up those. I think that's the story. I mean, offensively, they probably have the best offensive line in football. Jonathan Taylor is an outstanding runner. They've got two other runners behind him that are very good. The receivers are probably a little bit better this year, just, you know, the guys like Paris Campbell and Michael Pittman Jr. a year older. You know, T.Y. Hilton's a year older as well, which is not a good thing, but the other two guys, more experience is good. I think people believe in the coach. And then defensively, look, they're good on defense. You know, they obviously the DeForest Buckner signing a year ago was kind of a splash free agent signing. Darius Leonard is a rising star, if not already a star. And so I think they, you know, people look at them and say, we like their coaches, we like their front office, we like their talent, and if you believe that they can get more out of Wentz. So, like, let's say the numbers are exactly the same or just slightly worse, okay? What do you think the impact on scramble or second reaction plays or even design quarterback runs could be with Wentz?
Yeah, like, they'll be
way
better.
It could be more significant. Yeah. And so, look, you might still be 11-5, but maybe that gives you a shot in the postseason.
We're talking to Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, joins us every Wednesday. And I know Mike Vrabel was asked about this yesterday of if, you know, having more of a normal type schedule with the off-season programs and training camp, having everybody together, how much that could impact defensive play. I know other coaches, Nick Saban, has said that, you know, not having the normal stuff last year really impacted defenses. Do you think we're going to see a difference in just the overall product because things practice-wise are a little more normal?
I don't think so. Hopefully don't see is, like, you know, Kendall Hinton starting for the Denver Broncos. because of, you know, COVID violations and things like that. I think in terms of the ball at times or the accuracy of some quarterbacks. Think about Justin Herbert in his rookie year, the type of year that he had. And I don't know. I think that is there truth to like some details and some maybe little wrinkles that, you know, coaches have time to teach and install and players have time to practice together. And, you know, you maybe feel a little more comfortable with your group. Yeah, I think that can happen, but I don't know that that's detectable by the fan's eye. I really don't. And I don't feel like we watched a bad product of football last year other than, you know, like the Broncos example of basically playing somebody that should have never been a quarterback in the NFL.
So the Titans, as we know, we've talked about with you, they have a new offensive coordinator in Todd Downing. As a quarterback, what's kind of your process? And I know every quarterback's going to be different, but when you whether you change teams or you had a new coordinator to kind of get to know, get on the same page, kind of take us through that process that Ryan Tannehill is going through right now.
Yeah, I think part of what you hope happens is like, you know, you got to absorb everything that that offensive coordinator is saying to the team. And, you know, I think the hope probably for Ryan and the hope for, you know, Todd Downing would be, and Mike Vrabel and anyone that's cheering for the Titans would be that like when a play call is made, like as a quarterback, understanding why that call is being made. It's like, hey, we're calling this right now because we're trying to set something else up later. Is he calling this right now because he's expecting to get cover two? Is he calling that right now because, you know, he wants me to, you know, take that isolation shot? Or, hey, we feel like we've got to get A.J. Brown a touch? Or, you know, just having a sense or a great feel for why is he calling this? And, like, what is he trying to get to? And, you know, I can remember coaches calling plays and be like, no, I'm calling that so you'll get to the check down. Like, they're playing so soft. Like, we're trying to run them off, and I'm trying to get to the check down. It's like, oh, okay, well, I'm not sure any of us knew that. So, you know, I think it's kind of getting to that point where you have such a great feel of why a play caller is making the call that he's making.
What is a more important relationship to a quarterback, the OC or the quarterback's coach?
Well, I think it depends on how the communication works because, like, sometimes a quarterback coach is super valuable because maybe the offensive coordinator is a great play caller, a great play designer, he's maybe great in-game, but he's maybe not a great communicator or he gets overwhelmed in a game. And so that buffer with a quarterback coach can be outstanding. So, you know, I think the most important thing, I think one of the best lessons I think I ever learned was when a play caller would always understand that the quarterback had to love the play just as much as the play caller because he's the guy that's out there that actually has to do it. He's the guy out there that actually has to make it work. And, look, I saw Eli Manning – you know, run plays that he didn't like because he just didn't feel like he had the authority early in his career to tell Kevin Gilbride, like, I hate that play. I get it that you love it and had a ton of success calling it, but I hate it, you know. And then I saw Todd Haley in Arizona say to Kurt Warner, well, listen, if you don't like it, give me an idea of something that you do like, and we'll run that because you're the one that's out there. So I think that's the biggest thing. And so, you know, I would think at this stage of Ryan Tannehill's career and, you know, kind of the status he has with that football team that he should have a lot of input in terms of stuff he likes and doesn't like. And hopefully you see that kind of translate on the field.
He spoke to the media as we started this and was asked, you know, about not getting the respect nationally. You know, he gave they gave the answer you would expect, that everyone's entitled to their opinion and all of that. Do you feel that – I think everyone has somewhat of a chip on their shoulder in a situation like that. But do you feel like maybe he's getting more of that on his shoulder and that'll be a good thing for the Titans this year?
I do. I think there is an element nationally that has judged him from his time in Miami, has seen his success in Tennessee and kind of chalked it up to, yeah, well, they run first. You know, they're a running football team. And so I think there's an element of that. And, you know, Chase, when we talked a few weeks ago about, you know, I was doing these kind of quarterback rankings and specific traits of quarterbacks for ESPN, and he's like in every one of my, you know, top 10 lists on this stuff, whether it's like athleticism, accuracy, you know, fourth quarter drive, scrambling ability, like in numbers on this stuff kind of bear it out in terms of his production in games he's played over the past, two seasons. So I understand it if he does feel that way, regardless of what, you know, he says. And is there a chip on your shoulder and do you want to prove people wrong? I bet he does feel that way because no matter how much you try not to pay attention to it, you know, you still are made generally aware just the fact that he's even getting asked that question.
Frank Reich tested positive yesterday. John Harbaugh announcing Lamar Jackson tested positive today. Ryan Tannehill telling the media today after practice, Tim, that he would not have gotten the vaccine if it were not for the extensive protocols that the NFL has put in place. I know that Mike Vrabel's already sick of it. He's done like two meetings with the media. I wonder how sick coaches and players will, you know, how tired they will get of that question, and how much do you think this is going to be a storyline in the league this year, or do you think it's going to be more of just like a camp story?
Well, so let me go back to it. So Ryan said basically they were going to make it so miserable for me if I didn't get vaccinated, which is why I got vaccinated, right? I mean, that's essentially the gist of what
he said.
They
forced the players' hands.
But, well, I mean, yeah, but yeah, basically. I mean, that's what he's saying.
Okay. Right? That's what he's saying. And with people testing positive, because I'm pretty sure, I don't know exactly sure, did Frank Reich previously have COVID?
I don't remember. He said he's been vaccinated. I don't remember if he had COVID.
Yeah, okay. So let's go there. So he's been vaccinated and he's tested positive. So here's the deal, and I have no idea if he was asymptomatic or anything.
He
of that
is.
Stuff.
He said that he was asymptomatic.
And clearly, you still can get COVID if you've been vaccinated, right? Like that's, you know, no one is here saying that you're not going to get it if you've been vaccinated. But here's the issue that I think is really, really interesting for people is that, you know, many people that are not in the NFL get vaccinated, and if they don't have symptoms, they don't get tested. The way the NFL has set this up is even if you've been vaccinated, we're testing you every 2 weeks. And so we're going to continue to have people that now the return to play protocol is going to be different than it was a year ago if you've been, because now you have the potential to be vaccinated. But like this, you know, the stress and anxiety that goes along with that, especially if, and it's not just for Ryan Tannehill, but Ryan Tannehill has kids that are unable to be vaccinated. Right. So like, you know, there's all these families that of guys in the NFL, coaches and players, who like they live in homes with family members that aren't eligible to be vaccinated. And so even though they've been vaccinated, maybe there is a breakthrough infection, but if you're asymptomatic, you wouldn't normally test, but you're getting tested now because, you know, it's part of the NFL protocol. And oh, by the way, it's on a Friday or a Saturday that you get the results and you're not playing on Sunday. Like, I agree with Ryan. I really do. And I think that, listen, I guess, you know, those are the sacrifices you have to make if you want to play in the NFL. But, you know, it also doesn't really solve the problem in terms of missing time or missing game checks or any of that stuff.
Yeah.
And let me just say this. Ryan's not alone.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I don't know where he is in terms of like, you know, was he recently vaccinated? Was he vaccinated over 6 weeks ago? Was it, because it is a 6 week process, right? So by the time you get your first shot, get your second shot 4 weeks later, and then you're 2 weeks from that point. So, you know, let's say, for example, you know, Cam Newton or whatever. Yeah, let's just take a quarterback at any starting quarterback somewhere. Well, it's a 6 week process. So if they're deciding to get vaccinated now, it's not going to be until the very start of the season that they're actually considered fully vaccinated.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he said he's in the process. That's how he worded
right.
it.
Right. So. Yep.
So he said that he's in the process.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's how he worded it. That he is in the process of, or he is in the vaccination process, is how he put it.
Yeah.
So I would assume that means first shot. I don't know, but
yeah, and it even could mean second, you know.
Right.
But I would just say this, and I don't know what the reaction's being. Obviously, you know, Dak Prescott kind of refused to answer it and this and that. Look, I think I said this to you guys before. The NFL is touting these percentages of teams, you know, guys have been vaccinated. Rosters are 90 guys right now. Half of them are about to get cut. It doesn't matter if they've been vaccinated. They're not going to be on the roster in a month, okay? And then if you have – and so then at that point – you know, you say you've cut 45 vaccinated players. Okay, that's great. So your percentage might even go down a little bit. Doesn't even matter if your quarterback, star receiver, you know, whoever hasn't been vaccinated, right? Like, if Aaron Rodgers, you know, isn't vaccinated, like, is that a bigger deal than some guy that's about to get cut from the Packers? Of course it is. That's why these percentage numbers, I feel, and I don't know if Ryan would agree with me on this, but I feel have been used to pressure players that we're really uncomfortable with being vaccinated.
Tim, good stuff as always. Really appreciate it. Know you've got some TV work to do. Continue to have a great summer. We'll talk to you next week.
All right. See you guys.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN, our expert as well on Wednesdays. That'll do it for hour number two. We'll come back. We'll hear from head coach Mike Vrabel, what he had to say after day one of Titans training camp. Also, you heard us talking about some of the things that Ryan Tannehill said today after practice as well. We will have that for you all coming up in the third hour of Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.